new year, a new Congress, and there's an inauguration coming. And I was wondering, Jamal, does Congress even matter anymore? I love the idea of the People's House, and having worked there, and they're fighters and they're rabble rousers and they show up on the floor and they say feisty things, but it's just not what it used to be. And here's a data point to that we're not the only ones who feel that way. 76% of Americans, according to Pew Research, have an unfavorable view of Congress. Only 38% think that their representative actually cares about the issues of the district and is working for the district. Now, that's a change. It used to be people hated the institution of Congress, but thought that their person was great. They had personal connection. They'd show up at events. So this is something interesting as we sworn a new Congress this week, that most of Americans think not only is the institution bad, but their own person doesn't really care about them. Welcome back, everybody, to your latest episode of the Trailblaze podcast, where we talk about the people, issues, and ideas that are forming America. I'm your host, Nayara, joined by...
Hey, I'm Jamal Simmons. I'm happy to be here, and I've got like a music soundtrack playing in my head, so I am... If only we had the musical rights. We have to talk to Simon about getting our musical rights library up so we can, you know, jam our way into these segments.
we could just invite people inside our brains and they can bop along with us, though that's challenging, given that half the time it's like a Disney, there's a Disney soundtrack running with some kind of pop Lady Gaga Imagine Dragons. That's the mashup in my head these days.
Oh, you just haven't given the tech bros enough time to figure out how to, you know, get the chip in your brain to transmit to your computer so that everybody can, you know, listen to what's happening in your head. Although I'm not sure everybody wants to listen to everything happening in my head.
That'd no, but we can give them a little insight into what's going on in our brains. And I know given our deep political work together, we do look at things like Congress and the fact that this is a new year, a new Congress, and there's an inauguration coming. And I was wondering, Jamal, does Congress even matter anymore? I love the idea of the People's House, and having worked there, and they're fighters and they're rabble rousers and they show up on the floor and they say feisty things, but it's just not what it used to be. And here's a data point to that we're not the only ones who feel that way. 76% of Americans, according to Pew Research, have an unfavorable view of Congress. Only 38% think that their representative actually cares about the issues of the district and is working for the district. Now, that's a change. It used to be people hated the institution of Congress, but thought that their person was great. They had personal connection. They'd show up at events. So this is something interesting as we sworn a new Congress this week, that most of Americans think not only is the institution bad, but their own person doesn't really care about them.
I know it is completely different. People used to always sort of, that was the magic elixir for members of Congress to not do anything because everybody in their district liked them, but they didn't necessarily think that the institution was doing anything. So they could always blame everything on the institution. Well, you know what it says to me is 76% of Americans might have their heads on straight a little bit because, you know, Congress, I don't know what Congress has been up to like the last decade or so. You know, everything is tough. Listen, when Joe Biden was there, I will say they were able to pass some things on bipartisan basis, some big environmental legislation. They really got some stuff done around infrastructure. So those things really mattered. Obviously, when the pandemic happened, things mattered too. They passed a bunch of money to get people funded.
But those mattered, but in the strangest ways. And here's what I mean. Lots of money was spent in the right ways to stabilize the economy, to stop inflation, But the things that people feel, like the Medicare provisions, the fact that there's a cap of $2,000 and that's it. You know, all these seniors and folks who worry about Medicare being out of control, that's fixed. The idea of there being a cap on insulin prices, you don't have to worry about it being skyrocketed, right? Or that they're going to be playing the markets with whether or not you can get an insulin shot. All of that is great. But the impact of many of these things wasn't happening immediately. The legislation and all this was designed to fix the long-term stability of the system and the health of the economic. The idea that Biden did all this stuff that people aren't even going to see and feel for maybe 5 or 10 years is right for the country. But that still ain't helping me figure out what am I getting for my tax dollars?
I know. It's what a Republican said to me at one point. It's like distributed benefits, concentrated pain, right? So mm-hmm. we're all going to benefit from this great macroeconomic policy around environment, climate change. The earth will succeed. But I feel pain every time I go to the grocery store and I have to pay more money for bread or cheese mm-hmm. or whatever it was that was eggs that people were upset about. So it's hard when you're governing because you have to do things that are both for the broad swath of people and two that might be more forward-looking. And people don't necessarily appreciate that in the short term because they say in economics class, no one lives in the long term, right? We all live mm-hmm. in the here and now. And so it's a really tough thing to manage. But Congress did try to, I think Congress tried to do some interesting things. I know you get this data point. I want to do one thing because I think this is like the craziest story of the year for me. So not of the year, but I guess the year is only a few days old. So of the year. So did you see this Business Insider story about how rich musicians build the American taxpayers for luxury hotels, shopping sprees, and million-dollar bonuses? And they focus on like Lil Wayne, how Lil Wayne sold master recordings from his label for more than $100 million. And then he got a $9 million grant from a little-known pandemic relief program. And he used it for private jet flights, $460,000 on clothes and accessories, another $175,000 for related expenses for a music festival, and a bunch of money, $15,000 worth of flights and luxury hotel rooms from some ladies that he was spending mm-hmm. time with. But here's the part about it that's the most amazing. Business Insider didn't figure this out because they had to do some big investigative story. They figured it out because in order to get the money, you had to propose a budget. And then after you got the money, you had to report what you spent the money on. And so he literally put in the report $15,000 in travel expenses for these ladies.
He's like, I'm being transparent. You gave me the money. I'm going to tell you what I use it for. It's out in the open. That's the thing. So much of the COVID relief that went to hotel associations, to a variety of celebrities, the Trump administration had set it up as a first come, first serve. You've heard this term, needs-based. It was not needs-based, get in line if you hit a threshold. No, it was first come, first serve. So banks were like, great. Who do we know? How can we get this money out the door? If you didn't know a banker, if you didn't know how to do the paperwork and the corporate, all the grant systems and everything that, or how to do all of this filing, all three of those things you had to know to be able to do it. Who knows that?
The only banker I had
a relationship with. White collar people who have a professional staff of lawyers and bankers and all of that. Like, I remember my father as a business owner, a small business owner. It's like, I don't know how to get this COVID relief money. Like, I called the banker that I know who did my business loan. And he's like, we're already oversold. I don't think I can get you in line. Like that was the reality was.
And that's why they had to come back and do like a whole second tranche and they had to pivot it so that it was for people who were below a certain cap so that people could actually have time to get some of the money and be able to keep some of these small businesses open. But the thing about what happened with the big companies, and it's the thing about what happens with these big music executives and others who have taken the money, mm-hmm. is, get back to your central point when we started, people don't feel like Congress is doing things that are beneficial. So every time one of these things happens, it makes us have a little less faith mm-hmm. that whatever the government is doing is actually going to work for our benefit. And so you wonder why then 76% of people think that what they're up to is trash.
Oh, well, it's the fundamental idea of what Congress exists for was to have direct elected oversight over the spending of tax dollars, right? Only Congress can decide if there's going to be a tax increase or not and how that money gets apportioned. That's why the Appropriations Committee is the most powerful committee in Congress, and budget season is a huge deal because it's like, well, who's going to get what and where? That is the fundamental purpose of that from the founding fathers and the idea. And so, yes, it is a shame that I can't necessarily tell you beyond being a school district with good public schools, which frankly isn't necessarily Congress. It's my state government that does that, right? That is the fundamental principle of it. But even in the last few years, anytime you hear about the budget, it's about there might be a federal government shutdown because they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't agree. They couldn't find something to move forward. So it's like the basic money part isn't moving right. This last point of why, whether or not it matters to us, but why it matters politically, Trump's tax cuts are going to expire in 2025. So that's a this year thing, this big tax cut plan. So this whole idea of taxation, representation, and getting your worth for your federal tax dollar, that's going to come up again in this Congress. I don't know that I have confidence anything's going to change about it.
No, it's not. What's going to happen is more rich people are going to get more money and everybody else is going to get left holding the bag. And we're all going to have to pay this big tax debt at some point. And there's a whole lot of economics around this that are really funky. Like, over the course of time, the more we borrow money, the higher higher it costs for us to borrow money, mm-hmm. which means there's going to be less money to spend, which means we're going to have to borrow more money, right? It's just like it's like your credit card in a way. Mm-hmm. The more you borrow on your credit card and the less you pay on it, the higher your interest rate gets, which means you need more money to pay the interest on your credit card, which is a defeating cycle. And so if Trump wants to put $10 million of tax cut, I'm sorry, $10 trillion of debt on us mm-hmm. through his tax cuts, and that's going to be a huge problem, mm-hmm. not just for me and you, but also for our kids going forward. And then they want to say, because they give tax cuts, they're going to say, oh, look, we're out of money. You know what? We got to go to the Social Security Trust Fund. We got to go to Medicare, Medicaid. We got to cut these programs in order to pay for the debt, because or else we're all going to run out of money. So we have got to stop it before it starts. I'm not sure if that's going to be possible.
The other thing I do want to point out to folks when they say, when you hear this idea of, oh, you know, if you don't tax corporations or, you know, that minimal business taxes, they won't say corporations, they'll say business, but it means big business. It's not small businesses.
Yeah.
If you don't really tax businesses, then they'll be more productive and the money, all the trickle down, businesses are the economic engine. Two points to remember when people hear that. One, the big corporations, anytime they've gotten a big tax break, have used it not to raise wages, right? Not to do anything else for within their company that would help the working people or the consumer. They've used it to do stock buybacks. Mm-hmm. Yep. They've used it to reorganize and restructure so that they then can make more money with the money they already have.
Higher bonuses.
Yeah. Two, they benefit and use all of the public infrastructure in order to be able to make the goods and services to then give big bonuses and stock buybacks. They use the roads, right? They use all of the resources of, oh, let's attract some talent to us. And we're going to attract talent here by saying, look at these wonderful public schools around here, right? All of this, look at these lovely parks that you might want your kid to play at. It's all public infrastructure that they use and our resources, but they're the ones who pay zero. That's my biggest problem is that, and that needs to, you will hear members of Congress who say that, but are they really going to be able to do anything about it when it comes to a Trump administration and a Republican Congress and understanding that this is their thinking about how the economy should work? It should work to their benefit, not for anybody else.
You know, I did a bunch of work with a group called Patriotic Millionaires, and these were a bunch of millionaires who said that you ought to tax us. Anybody who makes more mm-hmm. than $1 million a year ought to pay extra taxes. And they had a surcharge they wanted to do about that. They were trying to get it passed. Even when Democrats were in charge, they had a mm-hmm. hard time getting it passed. But one of the things they point out is how corporations work and how they shift money around. I thought this was so interesting because you know how companies really work in their budget, that the bonuses and the salaries for the executives is kind of a constant. They've got to show enough profit in order to keep the markets happy. So that means everything else is a variable. How much they spend mm-hmm. on labor, how much the taxes are, how much they're spending on investment. All that's a variable. Because what cannot change is the money that's being returned to the wealthiest people who are involved in the corporation, or else then you get downgraded and it creates a whole other set of problems for the company. So what you've got to do at some point is tax them, because they're never going to voluntarily change the math of those mm-hmm. of those companies. And this is my favorite point. I think you'll enjoy this. So do you know Starbucks? You know, a lot of these companies figure out how to lower their tax burden with a bunch of different tricks. Starbucks at one point had figured out that the way that they could lower their tax burden is they register the Starbucks logo in another European country. Mm-hmm. And then they made all Starbucks have to lease the logo, use of the logo from the company that actually owned the logo in this low tax European country. So they didn't actually have profit because they leased the logo almost at the amount that they were profitable. So in the US, they were shown as being not very profitable. And then in this other country that had low taxes and corporations, they really didn't have to pay a lot of tax on it, mm-hmm. just enough. And so they never actually had to pay tax on their profit.
And that's
just amazing. I'm going to be a tax lawyer when I come back. Because
you only pay taxes on profit as a corporation. Right. As an individual, I pay taxes on income, period, mm-hmm. full stop. Mm-hmm. That's the big difference. Yep. Right? I am working and I'm paying off the top of it. And if you are not even a W-2 employee, right, where they take it out of front, I got to also plan to pay 30% yep. as a freelancer, as an independent person. As a corporation, all you got to show, you know, you show losses. If you can continue investors, even if you have losses, yeah, the people are making the money they want to make. They're bringing home. They've got great take-home pay. That's not their issue. This is going to be, I think, fascinating for this Congress to see how much of that ends up coming forward. And if this idea of radical economic change is something that is possible. But the numbers aren't necessarily there for the Democrats to do something radically different. They're not in the majority. But they could throw wrenches in what Mike Johnson's plans are or what Trump's yeah. plans are. Like that's not a great place to be, which is all you're doing is kind of stopping the stupid.
So if I was going to be my hopeful self, I would say Donald Trump got elected in part because a bunch of working class people wanted to shake the system up and they wanted to get more money, right? So if Donald Trump was actually being responsive to his political constituency, he would find ways to really help them out. Instead, what he's going to do is he's going to use a bunch of gimmicks to sort of make people, he's going to cape and ape whether or not he's actually doing things for people while he does things for the wealthiest people. So if you think about what the things that he wants to do in economic policy, put tariffs, which is basically a tax on people. So that's going to add inflationary pressure. He wants to cut taxes for wealthy people. So that's going to, you know, they're going to have more cash to spend. And remember when Democrats wanted to cut taxes and do things to help working class people, everybody said, you can't do that. It's going to create inflation. And then, you know, he wants to go after immigration and lower the amount of immigration in the country. And not just people who are here without papers, legal papers. Mm-hmm. They, if you listen to Stephen Miller, he wants to lower the total amount of immigration, particularly from what Donald Trump used to call shithole countries, which are Africa and Central America. And those are the places they want to stop people from being able to come in. I mean, Trump said himself, why can't we have more people from Europe? You know, more people from Slovenia and Slovakia.
Yeah, they ain't trying to leave their country. They got free
healthcare. He wants more Melanias. I mean, that's fundamentally what he's saying.
They got free healthcare.
Half people from Melania.
They got free childcare. Like, why would they be looking to come here? Yeah. Right? The folks who you know, want to come to the America are the ones who believe the American dream or that idea we've been sold of you can raise yourself up by your bootstraps, you can work hard and you got rewarded for it. That's what that right. That's mm-hmm. the folks who are getting great government programs right now. They don't need that. They're not looking for a place to get rewarded for anything. The immigration thing, I'm glad you raised that too, as part of obviously one of the biggest things that's coming forward with this Congress. The immigration piece is really going to start dividing the MAGA party. We already saw some of it. We've talked mm-hmm. about it with the idea of who gets visas and who doesn't. But you need a labor force, right? Who's inspecting and, you know, pulling the chicken apart in a chicken plant for our, you know, oversized chicken breasts that we're getting in the market? Who is doing the farm labor to make sure that we can get fruits out of season here in the United States? Like all these fun privileges that we have come because of migrant labor. A lot of it's not legal. Okay, legalize it. That's not right. That's not what the Millers of the world are less about the let's get cheap labor. There's a conservative, you know, Reaganite interpretation of immigration and how that boosts the economy. The Miller version of it is about American identity, right? It's about white American Christian identity. And that's where they're going to find their split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a cultural fight, not an economic fight for them.
Yeah. And so Democrats continue to argue can sit easily in that economic fight. But the cultural one is what's going to tear the party apart and make it almost impossible for Trump to really pass anything that's beyond just hammering on the idea of a border. Anything meaningful for the economy, I don't see how that happens.
And so here's what happens for everybody else, is that when this happens and this Trump plan fails, right, this Republican approach where they try to keep all these people together in this mm-hmm. Stitched up marriage that they've created. The question is, when people get disillusioned with mm-hmm. that, because prices haven't gone down, their economic situation hasn't improved in some way. They're abhorred at the fact that American children are being deported in order to, quote unquote, to keep families together as they to send adults home. They send their American-born children home. And so we've got a whole question around birthright citizenship, right? So all these things are happening and people become abhorred. They get abhorred by the by what they see on the cultural front. They're not getting economic benefits. The question is there any place else for them to go? And for those of us who are kind of on the center to far left of the political spectrum and say, we think there's another way, as Mario Cuomo used to say, the wagon train can go west and we can keep the whole family together, right? And we don't have to kill all the Native Americans along the way. We can all figure out how to do this. Like, if for those of us who believe that we can do this in a coherent way, will we have a plan, an agenda, an idea, a set of ideas for people to rally around? Or are we just going to sit here and be the no people and say, Donald Trump is not doing it? No, 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 no. And where do we go to find those ideas? I think a lot of those ideas are going to come from the laboratories in states and cities where people are really building a whole new way of doing business that doesn't involve the federal government having that much of a say.
That's also what makes our communities better and us as individuals feel better is when we're able to do something that we can see the impact of locally and help the people around us. And the idea of being able to learn that someone in California or some community in California is trying something to stop homelessness or trying, you know, some kind of basic income change or, oh, this is how you guys are funding education or you're doing these innovative programs. That's the value of being connected in this federation, is to get great ideas that ultimately can be used to help you where you live. And so I'm with you. I think that idea of finding and learning these stories of how people are essentially bypassing relying on federal government for anything other than, you know, just keep the basic money flowing that comes to the states. It's all about this local connection, the state and local activism, but state and local policy progress.
Yeah, and that's how you're going to build up a farm team, right? If you want to have leaders of the country, so many people come from these local efforts. They're the ones who really build up. And if I was on the left, I mean, what I would say is, if I was in the Democratic Party leadership, let's start recruiting some of these people, right? Like, so you start looking for the person who's the most respected person in the junior high school, right? Who's the parent that shows up that everybody listens to? Who's the teacher that everybody wants to take? Who's the person in the local coffee shop who organized an entire community to take care of families when the last devastating emergency happened? Like, find the people in the communities who are really doing good work. Let's run those people for office, not just run whatever lawyer can self-fund or whatever business person comes around who has enough money to put it together. Let's run people who really have an attachment, a connection to what's happening in these communities.
Well, Jamal, I think that's where we should go with this, is we should go and find those people and we should share those stories, because we're happy to gossip about what's going on in Congress and tell folks about the things that they don't know, that's how things really work. But the idea of finding those stories and finding those solutions and connecting them together, that's the work of the next few years.
I think so. All right, let's go do it.
Let's do it, Jamal. Let's find the trailblazers.
Let's find the ones who are blazing the trails. All right. Good to talk to you, Naira.
Take care.
Have a good week.